Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, October 20th. And John, it is officially, as always at this time of November, it is officially game week. The season is upon us. Can you believe it?
Wow. Now it's been a long, winding road. Here we are.
Indeed. I'll just come clean and be like, you know, upfront with everybody and say that I'm not going to lie. Part of me was really enjoying an MSU free fall. Like, I obviously love Michigan State sports quite a bit. But the older you get, the more you realize, hey, not stressing out over football is kind of a really nice feeling. You know, the Lions took all of my ability to care away very early in their season. So I've just been kind of coasting the last 6 weeks, and now here it's like remembering the final is next week, and you're like, oh man, I haven't studied at all.
Yeah, you I would say triggered me yesterday. When you mentioned that it was game week, and I was having such a nice time,
I know,
with my weekend fall days, and here we are. We're back to sports, back to cracking open beers at 9 a.m. Because you have to. Shower beers are back in play. It's on, and it's been like it's. It's October, mid-October. We're going to be playing our first game here. And then, you know, just when you think you're in the clear, Saturday evening, then it's Michigan week. It's like, I don't know. It's just fast. Fast and furious.
It's a lot. I think that's one way to very fairly state it, is that it's a lot. I have to say, today you and I were talking offline, to use some business lingo, about the fact that we were just talking about Michigan football and, like, you know, because we always kind of get ahead of ourselves and talk about, you know, what's that game going to look like? And usually, like, we're halfway through the season. We've got some idea of what the hell is going on. And this year, it's just, we're so woefully unprepared. Like, I'm not ready to have those conversations yet. Like, I'm just not, like, mentally. It's like, I know what their team looks like. I have a pretty decent idea of what our team's going to look like. And I'm just not prepared to think about those two things coming together and actually being, like, off a sheet of paper. I don't know that my mind nor my body is really ready for this fall. But,
you know what's awesome?
We will persist regardless.
You know what's awesome, though? Austin, I stand by, you know, that Michigan State has been removed from college football for, you know, 7 weeks. I've realized how much I enjoy the sport when I have no emotional taxed involvement. Like, I've enjoyed watching Sun Belt games more than I ever have before. The thing that I've missed the most, though, is watching other Big Ten teams.
Like,
I love watching crappy Big Ten football, and it's back, so let's do it.
I also just love watching, like, I like having a level of interest in a game that doesn't directly affect me. So other Big Ten football is just so appreciated, because at the end of the day, there are some stakes there, no question, but they're not the stakes that you have to deal with emotionally when watching your own team. So that's a very astute take, and one that I definitely agree with. So we do get those games back this week too. That is exciting. Before we dive into our preview and all of the great things that we have prepared for this week, we are going to be, for the however many straight year, wrapping up our position previews that we do. And we are finishing with the secondary and special teams. It's not a coincidence that we've saved the punters for last, as you'll know about this podcast. We are pro punter. But before we get to them, let's start with the secondary. The secondary is where you'll see, first and foremost, some extremely familiar names from a coaching perspective. you know, we've kind of, this is an added element this year in these previews because of the amount of change that went on with the coaches. But two names, one old, one, well, kind of new, old, yeah. but new, both reused, refurbished. Yeah. Those are the names that are going to be coaching up the defensive backs this year. At your cornerback coach is none other than Harlan Barnett, former defensive coordinator for Florida State, who by way of East Lansing, where he was formerly co-defensive coordinator, with his new safeties coach partner, Mike Tressel, who was defensive coordinator just a year ago. First thing that jumps out about these names is just familiarity and experience. I mean, I'm hard pressed to imagine that there are many defensive staffs out there with the years of experience and familiarity with a roster, with a program, with just the game of high level college football, that this duo brings to the table. So I think that alone is just a big leg up for Michigan State, and probably more than anything is really just going to help make this transition to a new scheme, a new group, a new everything, a new regime. I would just think a lot smoother from a transition perspective.
Yeah, it's a really big, we talked about this in the summer, just about how the amount of defensive coordinator talent, like levels of guys who have coached that at the highest level have been doing it, you know, that's going to pay dividends, I think, because they can take all that experience and channel into a smaller group of guys. I think that's going to be really helpful, as you mentioned, especially during this transition. And I'm getting ahead of myself because we're going to talk about first week opponent in a bit, but it just seems relevant right now. You know, the names you mentioned, so much experience as defensive coordinators, they're going against an offensive coordinator who has 1 year, I believe, of FBS experience as an offensive coordinator. So you got to feel good about just having seen some shit, man. You know, like there's a lot of value in that.
There is value in going through it. There's no question.
That's right. So, you know, these guys probably, if you ask them where they thought they'd be in 5 years, 5 years ago, it wouldn't be in these positions. But this is kind of the second wind come up for them, I think. This is their reprieval opportunity to help build Michigan State back up and maybe get further opportunities. I don't know where, but I think that's how they're viewing it.
Yeah, and it's exciting. You know, again, first time in a long time that MSU's had a new head man, but to have these names just for the transition is going to be very important. And I think really what says a lot about Michigan State as a school and a program and everything is that these guys are willing to take these positions. I mean, I would just think that ego alone is a big motivator for a lot of coaches, just people involved in football in general. And for these two to kind of, these are two guys that we're talking about sitting here 2 years ago, 2 years ago, you're talking about, you had very real conversations about both these guys lead, not only like wanting to get promoted, but leaving Michigan State in order to take over their own programs. And now we're sitting here 2 years later, and they're both just helping run the secondary, which is one of the units that I think is going to need kind of like the most help, to be honest.
Yeah. Let's
dive in. So I think first and foremost, people probably want to know about scheme. So the scheme here, you know, is probably not going to be a whole lot different than what you've seen before. But, you know, which is just high press man. But I think the really interesting elements are going to be just how much these corners move around. I mean, one thing Mark D'Antonio never really liked to do was move his best corner around to match up with another team's best receiver. That could be something that changes, not to say that we know anything about who MSU's lockdown corner would be or anything like that, but that's a situation that could arise. MSU did never played really a tremendous amount of zone. We know Mel Tucker's defenses historically have been a little bit more multiple. And with the star position being a big, obviously, portion of this defense, you know, how often do they go nickel and dime and take that position off the field, or how do they kind of intertwine with the linebackers and who's playing and covering and things like that. So a lot of questions. Honestly, this is probably the area, even more than the front seven, that I think really the most questions probably exist, would you say?
Yeah, I think the other bummer about when you have a really weak position group, or rather unproven, I don't know if it's fair to say they're weak yet, we haven't seen it, but unproven group, is you try and hide a little bit with the next position group, meaning, you know, linebackers, maybe you lean a little harder on them for certain assignments, more coverage linebackers as an example. As you listened in last week, very questionable position group as well. You know, like, so I guess if you're following what I'm saying, it's like you can kind of hide behind or lean on other groups harder. This is not a situation where they can do that. They're really going to be out there on their own. And I think one of the more pressing parts of the puzzle is that I believe we talked about it either last week or the week before about the defensive line having no pass rush to speak of, potentially. That's going to put even more pressure on these back four. You know, but pressure makes diamonds. So we'll see if these guys are up to the task. I have a little uncertainty on who might be starting, Austin, but you have a couple guesses.
Yeah, so that is probably one of the bigger questions. But I think we can make some reasonable assumptions and kind of go off of those. So the two names that jump out at me and that you've kind of heard the most about are Shakur Brown and Julian Barnett. In terms, if you're looking for odds on bets to be your two starters, those have got to be the guys. I mean, I think the fact that Julian Barnett has moved full time to DB says pretty much everything you need to know about his skill set, because he was not out of place as a receiver, as a true freshman last year. And that's a group, again, we've talked about it, has a lot of talent, but it's very little proven talent. And with CJ Hayes going down and probably missing the year, that position group is not overly deep and not overly experienced. All of that being said, Julian Barnett is no longer a part of that group and not expected, at least at this point, from what I've seen, to play both ways. So having him on this group speaks to two things. One, speaks to the fact that they really believe he's truly talented, and two, that this group needs him a lot more than those receivers do. So, gotta think he's you know, top of the list here to be starters. I mean, he came in as one of the best recruits in the class last year. It's pretty obvious that he fits from a physical perspective. I mean, this is a kid that's obviously an athlete, play both sides of the ball. I'd be very surprised if he's not a starter if he's healthy. Shakur Brown, I think, brings something that MSU is just frankly really short on in this position, and that's experience. I mean, you know, his play doesn't necessarily jump off the page, neither does his size, but he has played, and the names I'm about to read behind him are not guys that can say much of the same. So I think Shaq Brown is probably benefiting from a lot of PT last year. He did end up playing quite a bit down the stretch last year. So that's why he'd be my odds on favorite there. The other names that have jumped out, the one that really I've actually read quite a bit about is Chris Jackson. So Chris Jackson, I believe, is just a sophomore, but, he apparently has impressed quite a bit. He has pretty good size for his, position. I want to get his actual measurements here. Yeah, 6 foot listed at 6 foot, 200 pounds. Obviously, that's a pretty decent size. For a corner, anything over 6 foot is really solid. And quickly to go back to Barnett, he's listed at 6'2", 190. So you're talking about a prime physical, like, specimen yeah. there at the position. But Chris Jackson, again, he's apparently impressed in practice. And really, the other names on this list, Davion Williams, Kalon Gervin, Dom Long, none of those are going to jump out at you as names that you've heard a ton about before. So I'm inclined to believe that the hot hand is probably going to be the one that gets the crack here. Heard a lot about Chris Jackson. Dom Long, I think, is an interesting story too, because he's been kind of the special teams ace, number nine. You guarantee you have seen him running around and probably just don't even realize it. But this kid is apparently made some big strides and is probably going to be looked at here, because the list of players with experience, again, is fairly short.
Yeah. Before before things get too bleak, I will note that I think it's worth noting that there have been plenty of times, you know, while we've even done this podcast, but definitely within the last decade, where we took a look at the secondary at Michigan State and said, yikes. And then the opposite, they over, you know, delivered. You know, there were guys that just kind of out of nowhere stepped up to the plate and became actually even all Americans. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen this year. I'm just saying, like, it's happened before, and secondary is one of those positions where, like, a true freshman can just find his groove right away and become a three-year starter, you know, four-year starter. Angelo Gross might be one of those guys, you know.
Absolutely.
The kid from Ohio. So it's not all doom and gloom. It's just a lot of question marks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I kind of touched on this last time, but, like, that is truly one of the things that makes these seasons, like, the most fun mm-hmm. and the most interesting, is you get to watch these players blossom. And again, I don't mean to be terribly bleak, but there just is not a ton of experience here. Again, look at either side of that coin. On one side of that coin, that means, okay, you're going to see a lot of new faces. On the other side, it's, hey, these guys are getting a chance to emerge. And a guy like Angelo Gross, who enrolled early as a three-star from Ohio, is going to have a chance to crack into this group. But I do think there's two other guys that came into MSU with decent pedigrees and have, you know, a real chance here, and that's Davion Williams and Kalon Gervin. Kalon Gervin specifically came in from Detroit Cass Tech with a ton of hype. I mean,
he's a guy.
I mean, I still like him. He doesn't bring a ton of size to the party, but he knows the position. He's actually played a decent amount in his first 2 years. He keeps getting banged up. You'll notice he looks like he's got a friggin' huge harness on that shoulder every single time. So he's going to have to stay healthy in order to see the field. But if he does, he's going to have a chance. And then Davion Williams, another kid from the Belleville pipeline that brought Michigan State guys like Devontae Dobbs, Gabe Brown. I know I'm forgetting others. There's several guys from that pipeline. He brings good size at 6 foot, 180. He's going to have a chance to play as well. So I think this will be one of the positions where you see a lot of different guys early, like all seven of the dudes we just talked about, I expect to play in some way, shape or form at corner within the early part of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have noticed that, well, this is an area that this new coaching staff has hit the recruiting trail hard on, right?
Yes.
And are taking folks from all over the country, not just that cornerback, but at the safety position as well, because maybe we don't know where they're going to play. Maybe no one knows, right? But knowing that they have the size and definitely size, talk to Fulton about that, and to play maybe even more immediately, especially considering you know, what you're looking at in the depth chart. But yeah, take us through some of these recruits we've seen come through.
Yeah, so there's five, call it defensive back recruits, that MSU has landed in this upcoming recruiting cycle, and I wouldn't be shocked if they added one more to this group before it's all said and done. But the names are as follows. And the reason why I want to read these all together is because it's kind of hard to say which position they're going to end up at. I mean, you have guys listed at corner that end up playing receiver at, you know, after the recruits. So they're all listed as defensive backs. I think you'll see a handful of them stick there. So at the top of the list is Chuck Brantley. He's a four-star defensive back, highest rated of the group from Florida. You've also got Javon Grigsby, three-star from Louisiana, and Antoine Booth, a three-star from, I believe, Ohio. These are three guys that are all listed at corner. When you look at them, you know, as in terms of size, you got a pretty good-looking group. I mean, Charles Brantley's listed at 6'1", 170. Antoine Booth, a little smaller, 5'11", 165. And Grigsby is checking in at 6'185". So, you know, with the exception of maybe Booth, you're talking about guys that really fit that physical mold that it's pretty obvious Mel Tucker is looking for. And I do also think it's worth looking at the offer list that these guys had. Again, if we go back to Brantley, you know, we're talking about a kid that had offers from, I'm just scrolling through the list here, Florida State, Louisville, Maryland, Pittsburgh. He's had Rutgers, Washington State, Virginia, South Florida. So, you know, a decent list, maybe not the most exciting you've ever seen, but some solid schools. And for MSU to go down to Florida and snatch up a four-star DB, I think says a lot. And I think this probably has a lot to do with his relationship with Harlan Barnett, because I know he did have a Florida State offer, and obviously HP just came from there. Booth, who is actually from Hyattsville, Maryland, he actually went to DeMatha, goes to DeMatha, which is where Darian Harris went to school. His list looks a little bit more Mac than anybody else's. His best offer is probably from West Virginia or Maryland. But again, listen, he was one of Mel Tucker's first commits, committed all the way back on 420. Sweet. and so that's another good get. And then Grigsby has probably the most standout offers. I mean, he has an SEC offer in Vanderbilt, got an offer from Miami, Florida, Purdue. He also has another SEC offer from Auburn. So MSU beating out those schools, especially for a kid from Louisiana, is always a good sign as well. The recruits that are scheduled to play safety, and we will talk about that group a little bit more here in a second. These are actually two of the more exciting guys in my mind that MSU has gotten. The first, we'll talk about Michael Gravely Jr. He's from Euclid, Ohio. His list looks, I mean, I swear to God, almost identical to the list that MSU is always going up against. Cincinnati, yeah. Bowling Green, Boston College, Miami, Temple, Toledo, like all these weird MAC and like lower P5 schools. The important one here is Colorado, because that means he was offered by Mel Tucker and obviously made him a priority when he came over to Michigan State. But the most exciting of this group was really a surprise commit from last week in A.J. Kirk Jr. Now, he's listed as a three-star, but in reality, his offer list is much better than that of your average three-star. And the story behind it is actually really interesting. So apparently, his sophomore year, he just kind of decided, I don't really want to do social media anymore. I think there may have been some type of some type of thing where he got in trouble and was like, you know what, this just isn't worth it. And so he checks in at 6'1", 197, but the last time anybody updated his school offer list was after his sophomore year. And obviously he's heading into his senior year this year, but he's actually also the cousin of Mike Doss, who was extremely good at Ohio State way back when, early 2000s, when they had some of those great defenses, and Mark D'Antonio was his defensive coordinator, I believe. And he played in the NFL for quite a while too, but when you hear Kirk's list of scholarship offers, you're going to wonder how the hell this kid was a two-star recruit. I'll start go alphabetically with the big names here. Start with Arizona State, damn you, Herm. Cincinnati, Florida, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, Nebraska, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Penn State, Pitt, Purdue, West Virginia. I mean, all of those schools offered this guy a scholarship. This is an Ohio kid with a brother who was a star, All-American, I believe, at Ohio State, who had an Ohio State offer from Ohio and ended up going to Michigan State. That, to me, that's as big of a, like, recruiting win. It can be completely out of left field, too, right. as Mel Tucker has had to this point.
I mean, got to feel good about it. As we mentioned, so much of recruiting is built on what the recruits share, meaning who's been offering them and what they've been up to. And when you're in a pandemic and you can't be attending camps all summer, people get lost in the wash. This guy is one of them, and clearly is considering his offer list much higher rated probably than he's listed at. For what it's worth, still not too worried about recruit ratings, as we probably shouldn't be. This is a guy that I would imagine you'd see rating go through the roof once there's some tape on him from this year.
Yeah, he sounds like a kid that, you know, is in the Danikos Allen mold, I should say, of 6'1", 200-pound, quote-unquote, safety in high school, who I think could easily project up to that star position at MSU. So those are just – that's kind of the preview of the recruits of those positions right now. It's going to be interesting to see where they all fit in. And I will say that I will not be surprised at all if one or two of them moves up to safety, because as we look at this position group, there are a lot of upperclassmen in this group. And there's going to be a lot of snaps to take here in the not so distant future. So your two starters in all likelihood are at strong safety. The star of the show is Xavier Henderson. Another one of the guys who was a huge recruit in his time, and has started the majority of the last two seasons. He's really going to be looked on to be, I would think, the vocal leader and captain of this defense. If not the defense, definitely the secondary. I'm sure Antoine Simmons is probably actually the leader of the D, but certainly the leader of the secondary and a big time communicator. You know, back there, those safety positions obviously are really relied upon to kind of coordinate where the coverage is going and any adjustments that need to be made. So these are going to be really important. And Henderson is the type of guy with measurables and athleticism and skills to really hang with just about anybody in the Big Ten. And frankly, MSU doesn't have a ton of guys on the team in general that can say that. So his playing up to his potential, I think, is really imperative for Michigan State this year. At the free safety position, you're probably looking at Trey Person. He's bounced around, obviously, a little bit from corner to play safety. He's kind of been a little bit all over the place, but is really going to get his chance to shine and start here, it looks like, as a senior. So needless to say, an exciting opportunity for Trey. And I think we've seen enough flashes out of him historically to think that you'll get something resembling consistent play. He's a little bit undersized, so he's certainly not going to bring the thump the way somebody normally would from that position. He's checks in only at 5'11", 170, but I believe he's going to kind of get that first crack. Now, in terms of behind him, really the big name to know is a very familiar last name in Michael Dowell. Yes, he is the third Dowell brother. David and Andrew, obviously, at one point in time, big stars, all Big Ten type of players from Michigan State. Michael is really kind of interesting because he's in similar to his brothers, except for David. David was kind of a true positional safety. But, you know, Andrew was never really like true positional anything, and I think Michael kind of falls in that same bucket where he's a big safety. Like he really is quite a large safety. Checks in at 6'1", 215, but he can really fly too. Now, if he can really handle the position, then he's going to get a crack at really playing a decent amount here behind Person and Henderson. And I just think by the multiple nature of Tucker's defense, he's going to get a real crack at playing, and it's probably the odds-on favorite to replace Person at free safety moving forward.
Yeah, man. This is
got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do, because you know, you mentioned the free safety position, Trey Person. That is a completely undersized person for a Big Ten roster.
Yes.
You're looking for big. You're just looking for guys that can hang, and then you teach after that, right? Like it's hard to teach size. You can't.
It's impossible. Some would say.
So you're really leaning on the very few guys who physically can hang on a Big Ten field to take a bigger jump. And then you're leaning on the guys who aren't physically probably there to make the jump to like net neutrality, right? Like
right.
Just don't hurt the team. So that's where you're kind of at. You know, you mentioned that, you know, true freshmen rare, like Xavier Henderson did 2 years ago, rarely have the opportunity to crack maybe the safety position spot a little more. More corner position is where that tends to happen. But this year we might see a little bit of Darius Snow.
Yes.
One of the best, most talented freshmen on the roster.
Yeah, Darius Snow, nephew of former Michigan State point guard legend Eric Snow, longtime NBA player, I want to say he was the first commitment in his class, and obviously means a tremendous amount to Michigan State from a legacy perspective, from a play perspective. I mean, he's from Texas, so landing a Texas recruit is big. And obviously him sticking with Mel Tucker through the coaching transition was enormous for MSU. So he is definitely going to get an opportunity. I think he and Gross are probably the two, if I had to wager on guys that are in the second year here as recruits that are going to be true freshmen that'll get a chance. He just is physically kind of made for the position. I think he is also the type of dude that could easily level up and be a linebacker at some point, just based on his size. So this, it wouldn't shock me. Like you said, true freshmen rarely get an opportunity back, not rarely, but don't often get an opportunity back there just because of what it takes mentally. Kari Willis, one of the other success stories. So I guess it has kind of happened for MSU a decent amount over the last few years, but it's not an ideal situation. We'll put it that way. However, Michigan State might be seeing that again this year, but Darius Snow, I would say is, if not this year, definitely a name to keep an eye out for in the coming seasons for sure.
Yeah, Austin, as we talk about true freshmen, it's unique this year even more so than last year where, you know, that redshirt rule, you get to play four games. And before, that would probably be, you know, a third of the schedule. Now it's four of potentially nine games and 10 if there's a bowl season. So there you get to play almost, you know, half the season without losing a year of eligibility. You might see a lot of that in this Rutgers game.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge difference between, you know, practice field and game field, you know, who can do it when it matters. And you might see a lot of freshmen get that opportunity to get reps, get an entire series. And if they don't fade from the spotlight, then maybe they actually earn an entire year's worth of reps versus four games worth. So something to think about.
Definitely. One of the things that we will be looking for in our initial game here against Rutgers, the season kickoff. Okay, now that the actual position groups, I shouldn't say that.
No, because
now that the prime special, the prime groups are done, now we'll get to the most special of teams.
That's right.
That is the special teams. That's how I meant it.
The most important in the Big Ten, you could argue.
Absolutely. I genuinely think you are correct. First of all, our love for punters on this podcast is well known, and it obviously meant a little bit tongue in cheek, but in all reality, with a team like the one that Michigan State is about to field here in just a handful of days, winning the field position battle and limiting those types of critical errors, putting points on the board when you can, be it via field goal or not, like that is super important. I mean, make no mistake, Michigan State's going to need help scoring points this year, and having a kicker like senior McMuffin, Matt Coughlin, is potentially a massive asset for them.
Yeah, and take it a step further, even kickoff specialists, you know, making it so balls are not returnable. That matters. We've seen years where Michigan State's kickoff just couldn't get it to the end zone and resulted in poor field position for the defense every single series. And then take it a step further, the long snapper position. We know how important that is. You can talk to our friends down the way in Ann Arbor about snapping the ball. You need to do it.
You got to be able to. It's a fact.
And Michigan State has a veteran, Jude Pedroso, sophomore, who had opportunities last year, coming back, so a bit more seasoned, and also a grad transfer, I believe, in Nolan Rossback. So plenty of experience there, an area that you don't want to have to worry about. Same with kicker, as you mentioned. A lot of points were, I think, left on the field last year, especially considering what maybe we had seen from Matt Coughlin in years past. We kind of know his range now, and we know that he was put in a lot of unfair positions because of the offense, which probably hurt his percentage, you know, overall, and made it look probably a bit worse than people give him credit for. I just want to note that he's the fourth most accurate field goal kicker in MSU history. You know, he
that's crazy.
Yeah, he's average. He's better average than Michael Geiger. Much better average than Morton Anderson. You know, I just think sometimes the slander gets a little too hot on the Twitter. And one thing I will note, Coughlin is the only player on Michigan State history who's never missed an extra point. So now that I've called that out, you know.
I was going to say, so his first one will happen this week. So that's great.
So But seriously, there is he's a bit more consistent than I think people give him credit for. And I will note that last year, specifically, he was put into a more long, especially for college kickers, situations than anyone should feel comfortable with. And that brought down his percentage quite a bit. So, looking for a bit of a bounce back year, but also hoping to, be set up for success, a bit more too. So, the punter, grad transfer from UTEP, a three-man race though. Mitchell Crawford is the grad transfer, but you also have Tyler Hunt. You have Evan Morris, who redshirted last year. And then we mentioned in the tight end portion of the position previews, and even is that Tyler Hunt? Who is the?
Well, yeah, that's Tyler Hunt.
We don't know if he's even available to punt. We'll see.
I want to restate. If we could have a punter / tight end, I think you have to let Michigan State win the Big Ten because you've peaked. It does not get more big. I don't think it could ever possibly get more Big Ten than that.
Well, you know, I
hope it doesn't have to happen, but like I can find the comedy in that.
I would just say, like, what's the saying? Like when you have a punter who can also play tight end, you got to do it.
You just simply have to.
You got to do it.
It'd be a crime not to.
Exactly. But Austin, I know you have some takes on a position that, frankly, has been extremely lacking in the last 10 years. Only one year I can remember feeling confident at this position. There were the kick and punt return positions.
Yes. Now, this is an area where if you are a team, say, with limited physical resources, limited explosive playmakers, things like that. This is a position that, like, very like special teams in general, it's an area you want to win because it legitimately can set you apart from other more talented teams and keep you in games that, like, quite frankly, sometimes you have no business in being in. Now, I don't think MSU is necessarily that. Like the level of talent is that big of a dearth, you know. I think they've got more than enough to be proud of. But regardless, great teams execute well on special teams, and Michigan State simply they've been able to be a great team despite not really having effective players at these positions since. I mean, I don't know, Keyshawn Martin. Like, really, honest to God, that's the last one I remember being like, okay, that's like a legit threat. Now, that's not to say they haven't had the athletes that they could put back there to do it with, but it just, for whatever reason, just has not been a consistent area. But this year, once again, now who's to say if it'll actually be effective or good or whatever, but the athletes are there probably in greater amount than you know, they have been in the last handful of years. And I think we don't really know who's going to be returning kicks and punts, but there are some names on there, like Jalen Naylor, like Jaden Reed, like Julian Barnett, three guys that can bring legitimate explosion. I think Naylor, honestly, is probably the guy whose job it would have been the last couple of years if he had just been able to stay a little healthier.
Yeah.
He's probably your no doubter on one of those positions. I mean, typically you put two kick returners back there anyway, so it's hard to imagine him not being one of those two guys if he's healthy this year. But it also provides an interesting opportunity for some of those other really athletic young kids, like the Ricky Whites of the world, Anthony Williams, one of the running backs. I mean, these are guys that legitimately bring explosion and elusiveness to that position, and, you know, might be able to just give you something that you don't have. Like, one of the players that's a perfect example, I think, of this is like Cody White. Like, Cody White was a great player, but he was never known for his elusiveness or I should say his like raw athleticism. Like, Michigan State put him there because he was could kind of catch the ball. And that was like, honestly, like the only big reason. So to bring something more to the table than that, I think would be a big win. So I'm not sure who it'll be. Again, my odds on favorites would be Jalen Naylor and Jaden Reed. There is also the whole thing where you kind of have to balance, you know, potentially, you know, not wanting to overwork somebody or tire out critical playmakers. But you know, I would like to think that this could be an area that could be a plus rather than a net negative here. If it is, that's a big time win for Michigan State.
Absolutely. You know, I'll make a prediction that probably won't pan out, and I have no reason to believe it will happen anyway. But I would bet you actually see on the kickoff return unit one of the players we mentioned and Connor Hayward. And not because Connor will be expected to field said kicks, but because he's the kind of guy that if the ball didn't go to him, you feel okay about it. But also because he can actually be that lead blocking back for you as well. So yeah,
Connor is he's an up back, if nothing else. You're absolutely right.
So, really getting into the special teams now, huh? We're talking up back.
This is a Big Ten team at the end of the day, John.
That's right. That's right. The special teams, you're right, truly special. They don't get enough their due, and frankly, we are a pro special teams podcast. So looking for a lot out of Ross Ells this year. You know, he's got to bring the noise.
Figure it out, Ross. That's my piece of advice. Figure it out or the punting gods will have their way with you.
That's right. So, Austin, should we take a commercial break?
I think we should try, John. I think we should try. Okay, now. Then we're back.
All right. Welcome back, everybody.
Nailed it.
Nailed it again. So the second half of the podcast here, it's really we're really rounded into form. We're going to give you a few notable national results and then previewing the Big Ten. And then our favorite, why Rutgers stinks, final followed by a season prediction. So juicy. Could last a while. Here we go.
A lot of time, a lot of meat on this bone here. So this will be fun.
So last week, only a couple notable games we're talking about, but BYU took out Houston by 17, and it's time to talk to your kids about BYU in the playoff. I know no one wants to hear it, but they are ranked number 15 now, I believe, in the country. Zach Wilson is a bona fide Heisman candidate. He's actually a decent quarterback, unlike Taysom Hill, who in the NFL pretends to be a tight end.
Paid.
Yeah. This kid's actually good. And in this game, threw for 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks, and was the team's leading rusher. So he's a reason to watch BYU if you're ever, you know, yearning for a late night late night snack.
I think the word you're looking for is desperate. But yes.
You know, to keep the BYU theme going, you know, if you need to keep the buzz going, you know, if the afternoon games are over and you are stuck with that really difficult decision of like, man, am I going to go to bed at 7 o'clock because I'm so drunk? Or am I going to rally here and watch some BYU football and drink because they can't? You know, that's what I'm going to do. So Zach Wilson, he reminds me a lot of Jimmer Fredette, football version. Entertaining. Sure. He's entertaining. Like every time he gets the ball, you're like, man, what's going to happen? So I'm hyping him up a little bit, but seriously, I have no reason to believe that BYU can't finish the season undefeated, and then you got some decisions to make. So
I'm pro this BYU in the playoff talk. Just because of the Mormon jokes that we could get off online really would make it worth it. And like, oh boy, the thought of, I mean, as much as I'd like to see some team actually like compete with Bama, like it is kind of funny to see other teams get like ritually sacrificed to them like Michigan State did once upon a time.
Absolutely.
So if it could be BYU, I think that would be a very funny, like I picture BYU fans at that game. If they could go to that game, maybe sitting in their own, I just picture like aggressively like marbled and white painted homes. That's just what I picture, like drinking a glass of whole milk and being like, well, this isn't very nice. This Crimson Tide is a bunch of bullies. I like that visual.
You know what's crazy is that like, every single bowl committee member has like the conundrum on their hands of like, well, if we pick BYU, keep in mind, alcohol sales are going to be terrible.
Plummeting.
But they're going to bring their whole family, and every BYU family is like 9 people. So like, there's that. Consider that.
I think you have to offer glasses of whole milk at your concession stands, and I really think you'll make up for it. Like, the beer sales will be negated.
I'll tell you, in the other game we watched, Alabama and Georgia, very little milk was had. A lot of light beers. Alabama really took control in the second half, which was surprising considering Georgia was thought to be the second half team. At least they had shown this year. Alabama winning 41-24, losing, I believe, 24-20 going into halftime. So Mac Jones became a true Heisman candidate after this one, going for 417 yards and 4 touchdowns. We seem, Austin, kind of destined for a Bama-Clemson part 5, unless OSU crashes the party, right?
I mean, yeah, I think in this iteration of college football, like, until further notice, I think you can kind of just expect that. Like, until Nick Saban retires and until Dabo, maybe when Dabo goes to Bama, Clemson falls off. I don't really know. Yeah. But, I think those two names are in the conversation until further notice. I'll put it this way. If Ohio State, if they can find a way to get Ohio State in that playoff, you better believe they're going to get Ohio State in that playoff. Too much brandness at stake. And honestly, with all of the things with let them play and all that stuff that Ohio State went through, I got to think the competition committee is going to throw them the proverbial bone if it comes down to it. But Ohio State is probably the only other school that can legitimately go toe-to-toe year in and year out talent-wise.
Let's put it this way. If a team that wasn't Alabama, Clemson, or Ohio State won the national championship, I would be shocked.
I'd be shocked.
Absolutely floored if that were the case. So, but we still play because it's fun and it's hilarious because there are things that happen like the Big Ten and Spirit game of the week, Louisville at Notre Dame, which finished 12-7 final. The Irish, probably easily the worst undefeated team in the country. 12-7, Austin. 12-7.
It feels good to say, and it feels good to hear. Like, I don't know, just something about 4 field goals is just remarkably Big Ten. And to get 4 field goals and to not lose is just something you can really only strive for. Like, that's just a remarkable achievement.
You know, you look at the box score and you say, geez, Louisville had 137 yards passing total. But then you see that Notre Dame actually had less with 106. Like, yikes.
Sheesh. That's what I say to that. I have an NFL version of spiritually Big Ten game of the week I'd like to submit.
Yeah. Hey, one more thing before you do, because
okay,
I just want everyone to know that Notre Dame's leading receiver had 28 yards per season.
Mm.
It just feels that's nice, right?
It feels good. Feels good.
Right. To hear. Take it away with the NFL.
All right. So one game that jumped out at me as remarkably Big Ten was the Denver Broncos and New England Patriots. Final score of this game, 18-12. You may ask, how did Denver score 18 points? Well, Denver scored 18 points by kicking 6 field goals.
Yes.
Brandon McManus, 6-for-6. New England also kicked 2 field goals. Nick Folk went 2-for-2. So yes, we're talking about, of a 30 total scored points, 24 of them came via field goal, which I think is just tremendous. The quarterbacks combined to throw for less than 300 yards, no touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. and the leading rusher from a running back perspective for New England had 19 yards. And the leading receiver in that game was a running back with 8 catches for 65 yards. I mean, all of these things were just so beautiful. New England also had 4 fumbles, which is great. One of them was not lost or recovered, which I'm trying to figure out how that happened, but I really like that it did.
Wait, I think the best part is that, like, this game did not take place in a blizzard. Like,
no.
This was a perfectly fine weather-wise.
Just a mild New England afternoon produced 30 total points and 4 total interceptions. I mean, just, again, just a master class in Big Ten professional football.
Really, really excited to hear that information. Thank you for adding.
I have one more thing to add here. The Chiefs and Bills game is going on right now, and Harrison Butker has missed another extra point. And I know we talked about McMuffin never missing an extra point. Harrison Butker has missed an extra point in literally all 6 of the games the Chiefs have played and is still has his job. And I think that is something, again, we all should strive for. To be that good and to be that inconsistently consistent and keep your job. It's just a wonderful.
Well, and also that they are so confident in their offense that they're like, yeah, we can afford to miss one here and there. We get it, buddy.
Just one? That's fine.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Hey,
2, it's okay. I mean, like, it's not a big deal. You just, listen, if you need to miss one, just tell us. It's totally fine.
We get it. Your foot gets tired going out there so much. It happens.
Yeah, listen, you got a tough gig, man. yeah, so I just wanted to submit those as well.
Good stuff. And thank you to all who alert us on College Football Saturday.
Ah, yes.
It's great. Really appreciate the both those and the punting updates. Frankly, they usually go together. So thank you. Okay, Austin, our first preview of the Big Ten season. Usually we go game by game, but this time around we'll give a little update on how we're feeling about each team as well. So Big Ten season kicks off actually this Friday night. Sure.
Yes.
Illinois.
Super big.
Exactly. Illinois travels to Wisconsin and is a 23.5 point dog to the Badgers, which surprised me. You know, we talked about this. This is the same Illinois team that beat Wisconsin last year. Again, to be fair,
people forget.
Massive upset. I get it, but they did it. They already did it once. And here comes the preview. Wisconsin is replacing their number one wide receiver, Cephas, who plays for the Lions now. Their number one running back, Jonathan Taylor, who might be the best running back they ever have had at Wisconsin. And their quarterback for the past 2 years, I believe, Jack Cohn, is still nursing a off-season surgery, I believe. So they'll be starting a brand new quarterback. Now, Wisconsin, probably the most consistent program in the conference outside of Ohio State. They seemingly are pretty good at reloading. Those are some pretty important positions we're talking. So
yes.
That's to say, you know, I have all the confidence in the world Wisconsin's going to win this game by 23.5 to a team you lost last year. Oh, man, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I think Vegas is just counting on people having just completely forgotten that game took place, which, in their defense, something totally understandable for your average fan.
Yeah, I kind of did, you know.
Yeah, I definitely did. You brought it up, and I was like, oh, wow, totally forgot about that one. But, yeah, I mean, that's there's something to be said for, you know, yes, like you said, the consistency of Wisconsin is unquestioned. But I have to also say that you replace that many skill position players, you know, there's it's a little nerve-wracking. I will say, yes, Jonathan Taylor, obviously stud, already doing well in the NFL. But if there's one position Wisconsin's got to feel okay about replacing, it has to be running back. You know, that's, sure. you know, they've churned out good ones. Even if you're not that good running behind what, you know, is sure to be a very good offensive line, probably going to go a long way. I think that's one of those schools we talk about all the time. You know yourself understand who you are and play to your strengths. And that's nobody does that. I would argue almost nobody does that better than Wisconsin. So I expect them to win, but yeah, it's, I don't know about by four touchdowns.
Yeah. Interesting that, and the other team, Illinois, they are probably, we think they're on schedule for their, I don't think rebuild is even the word. It's reestablishing stabilization.
You know, just build. Maybe not a re. It might just be a build.
Yeah, build. Build anything. And they're ahead of schedule with that win versus Wisconsin, and basically guaranteed Lovie Smith another, what, 3 years, no matter what. So
how many do you want, Lovie? Like, at this point, if you're Illinois, I don't know how you get rid of them. It would be a massive mistake. It could be a Bo Pelini-level firing where you're just kind of like, we've lost our sense of self.
That said, you know, Illinois, their schedule, I don't know, man. I've not seen a lot of wins. They have crossover with Ohio State. And they do get Rutgers, which is great. But I don't know. I just don't see a ton of W's. But who knows? They are starting Brandon Peters at quarterback, a name you might remember, former Michigan quarterback last year. Quarterback of the Illini for, I believe, almost the entire year, beat Michigan State. So who's to say what you have in Champaign this year?
You have something. You have reason for guarded optimism, I suppose.
Yeah, uniforms and everything. So on to the Saturday morning kicks. Nebraska rewarded for all of their off-season harumphing to get back on the field. We'll face off against a Big Ten champion, Ohio State. This is a game that opened as a 21.5-point Buckeye favorite. That line has since moved all the way to 27, and I would guess before kick will make its way to 28. People feeling really confident in this Ohio State team, whose win-loss over-under was 8.5. And that means a lot of folks think that they're going to go undefeated, and I am one of them. How about you, Austin?
Yeah. First of all, huge shout-out to the Big Ten schedule makers for just flipping the double bird to Nebraska. Like, listen, you guys are a real pain in the dick this entire time. We're going to go ahead and give you the worst possible matchup week one. I just – like, it's a crossover game, too. It's not even an in-division game. I just – it was such a clear and obvious middle finger that I just really appreciate the level of pettiness that they've gone to. So shout-out to them. But yeah, I mean, I think the funny thing about the 8.5 number is that they're literally playing 8 regular season games. Like, you get a 9th, but I suppose I'm not counting that as the regular season because it's just like technically a, whatever, call it a championship week thing. So if you count that, you have 8 known opponents. I'll put it that way. You have 8 known opponents and they're saying, yeah, you're going to beat all those teams and then half of another one. We don't even care who it is. Like, that's, it tells you a lot about what people think about this team. And yeah, I'm not going to be the guy that doesn't think they get it. And like, even though, you know, Chase Young is gone, a lot of other good players are gone. It's still Ohio State. Like I said it earlier, but like, it's the only program, in my opinion, unless I'm forgetting somebody. I mean, LSU kind of proving the point this year of like, there's only so many people that can go year to year, year in and year out, toe to toe with Bama and Clemson. And Ohio State truly to me is really the only one. Like, some people might say Oklahoma. I'm not going to say Oklahoma because they choke every single year. But, yeah, so I don't even know that they're number three. I suppose they're number three in that list. But, like, you know, it literally does not get better in terms of company. And they can confidently put themselves in that class, in my opinion.
Well, the reason is – yeah, the reason is because Justin Fields is back first and foremost.
Well, that's the biggest reason this year, no question. I mean, you bring back what is maybe the only chance of Trevor Lawrence not being the number one overall pick is that somebody gets drunk on Justin Fields and makes him the number one overall pick. And I don't even think you would look at that and think, okay, this is some – like, it would be the – I think everybody universally would be surprised, but I don't think people would be shocked, and I do not think that it will be surprising at all to hear as the draft comes closer that some people prefer Justin Fields because he just brings a different element. He does all of the things that Trevor Lawrence does well, pretty much close to, if not the same level of caliber, and kind of brings a little bit more mobility than Lawrence does. So, and it's played in probably a slightly more NFL-ish offense, to be honest, which is crazy to say about Ohio State. It's true. So, Ohio State's a bunch of beasts, and I fully expect them to cover that line.
That, it takes us to Nebraska, who would have you believe that they're back. But this is Scott Frost / Landry from Friday Night Lights, third year. And he has not performed to date. And frankly, I have not a ton of reason to believe that, you know, they will be back anytime soon, especially with the way his season is kind of lining up, first with Ohio State and then from there taking on Wisconsin right away, traveling then to at Northwestern, followed by Penn State. So
that's their first four games.
That is why their AD cried to the media that they were being treated unfairly by the conference, to which I say, you talk a lot of shit. Tell us that you're a blue blood. You want us to take you seriously. Do it. Here is the chance.
Well, and not only doing all that, but then have done nothing to even come close to proving you deserve it, and now you're getting the chance to prove it after you – you know, bellyached for a season, threatened to leave the conference because you thought your package was so big, like, get out of here. So I hope they lose every single game.
Well, you wouldn't be the only Big Ten fan. They would have you know that Adrian Martinez is back behind center and that this year is different and he's actually good. And not to believe the data that's in front of you that proves that he's not.
What does science know? I think that's one thing we've all learned this year. Science knows. So why pay attention to numbers?
So we'll see how he fares in his first game. And I just don't have a ton of faith. As we mentioned, the beginning of that schedule is tough. And we'll see if they are able to stay together if they fall apart. Wouldn't be too mad if they fell apart. Then we hit the afternoon games here, Austin. You got first, Purdue hosts Iowa. Breaking news today, head coach Jeff Brohm of the Boilermakers has tested positive for COVID-19, so very likely he will not be joining them on the sidelines.
If there's one person I expect to pull a full Hugh Freeze and coach from a hospital bed with a pair of binoculars, it's Jeff Brohm.
Yeah, I
1,000% expect that. I mean, obviously, you know, nothing but the best to him, and I hope he recovers and is fully healthy and back on the sidelines before too long. But certainly not going to help Purdue's chances in this one. I think Iowa, though, you know, Purdue. I'll put it this way with Purdue. Jeff Brohm should have cashed out while he had a chance. They are going to be in a tough spot again. They haven't really improved their talent base too much, and Rondale Moore opted out of this season. Rondale Moore, not just the best playmaker on the Boilermakers, maybe the best receiver in the conference, first-round caliber talent. I mean, legitimate game-breaker. That kid is a true star, and I kind of think they're screwed.
He actually is going to play this year.
Oh, he is. He's going to – okay, see, I thought he opted out. I didn't realize he had opted back in. Okay, huge break for them. They're still going to suck.
Correct.
There's my analysis of Purdue football.
But he's worth
he's worth a watch, though, for sure. No question.
Man. So, yeah, Purdue not feeling good at the moment. You mentioned Iowa. This is a team that's replacing a lot as well. And, you know, this is because of the stability they've had at head coach for the last 21 years, they kind of get a pass for just they're going to win 7 to 9 games a year. We just know that. But more distractions, I believe as of today, Austin, there was a $20 million lawsuit against Kirk Ferentz and additional members of his staff, former members asking him and the university to step down and that they were owed money. in losses, emotional, I believe, abuse potentially. And then on top of that, they lost their recruit today as a big, specifically because of that. So I bring that up just because a lot of distractions, for that program right now.
No kidding.
Yeah. So,
not a program that hasn't, like this is not a Wisconsin type of program that is, I mean, yes, like you said, they're 7-9 pretty consistently, but they've bottomed out in certain years too. And I like, you know, they throw the occasional 5-win season in there. It feels like, and, feels like, you know, we could be looking at whatever the 8-game version of that type of season, obviously, with all the distractions and everything, you know, that's a lot to, take in as a football team. And I don't know enough about the issues to speak in any type of educated portion on it, but hopefully the right thing is done, whatever that may be. But yeah, going to be an even weirder year in Iowa based on everything that's going on.
That's right. So that game, Iowa, the default favorite because they probably should be. And I think 2-3 point favorites, right? Now, so almost a toss up. The upset alert of the week, or the game, I want everyone to keep back. Penn State travels to Indiana. Indiana, I guess, kind of forever stuck in the friend zone of the Big Ten East contenders. They've never been able to break through. You know, every year is the year. I don't think they at all have the talent to keep up with Penn State. But when it's the first game of the year and there hasn't been a traditional camp, why not? Because Indiana does return their top three playmakers. Friend of the pod, Michael Penix Jr., and his mother, who corrected us on how to say his last name last year, which we appreciate.
He did not take into account, however, do appreciate.
Exactly.
I will not make said change, but I appreciate the clarification.
Watt Filer, I believe, is he's not just a great number one wide receiver for Indiana. He's a great wide receiver in this conference.
I agree.
And then on top of that, Stevie Scott. At running back. So, you know, they certainly have the guys with the experience at skill positions, whether they can hang with Penn State in the trenches and everywhere else is yet to be seen. But yeah, trendy upset pick for this week.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head with your breakdown of Indiana right there. Having a little triplets group is not a common thing for a school like Indiana to have legitimate like conference level talent at all of those positions is awesome for them. That'll probably keep them in more games than they probably deserve to be in. But it's all going to boil down to that line on offense. Like, and that's the position where, you know, if you're a mid-tier type of program, you know, can you keep up down there? Answer is usually no for most mid-tier programs. But, you know, we'll see if this – sometimes talent can overcome that. I think the thing they deserve credit for is the fact their defense has, in general, gotten much better over the last handful of years. And as long as that defense can keep them in games and – you know, if Penix can keep them moving around, can keep them scoring, then, you know, they're going to be okay. So, an interesting squad, but like you said, permanent friend zone.
Yeah, and then you have Penn State, who is had a down year recruiting-wise this past year, but their starting positions are just stacked. You know, this is a program that is ranked 13th best talent composite in the country, trailing only Ohio State in this conference. And so, you know, just top to bottom, you know, they're too deep. They're just so much more talented than Indiana that I just have a hard time. I just, you know, I'm never going to be able to pull the trigger on Indiana, you know, beating anybody of worth until they actually do it, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, despite all these nice things we've said about them, Michigan State did beat them last year. So that's something to consider. Penn State, like you said, talent-wise, there's no question it's there. And honestly, this is one of the teams that probably fashions themselves as the second best in the conference year in and year out now with Wisconsin. But seem to always consistently come up like that half step short. So they'll get a chance this year, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. The great thing for Penn State this year is that they have the opportunity to play Ohio State in the second game this year. And I'm very much in the camp of play people as early as possible if yes. they are more talented than you. So Penn State has that advantage, and I think actually gives them a leg up rather than if they had to play them at the end of the year.
I would agree.
So let's keep it moving here. For some godforsaken reason, there was a decision made at the Big Ten Network to have their night game be Maryland at Northwestern. And I just can't for the life of me think why they wouldn't tuck this one at 11 a.m. with the rest of the, you know, the garbage. But yeah, Maryland opened as an 11-point dog to Northwestern. For some reason, everyone is feeling very bullish on Northwestern this year. I don't know why. They went 3-9 last year. I have no reason to believe that they've improved. I take that back. They did get rid of their offensive coordinator, who turned in a worse guidance at the position than even Michigan State's offensive staff. So they've cleansed Folks. Themselves of that. So they might just be better by default. And they will be starting former Hoosier Peyton Ramsey at quarterback this week. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on Northwestern you'd like to share?
It's Northwestern. Like, I mean, Peyton Ramsey's fine, but like, is Peyton Ramsey what's going to make you like good? I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, like, here's the thing. I don't know. It doesn't do much for me.
Exactly. It doesn't do a ton for me either. So Maryland's also a team that's never done much for me. For what it's worth, Mike Locksley is producing, if people can stay healthy, a more competitive group than they've had in a long time. For what it's worth, they're the sixth most talented team composite in the Big Ten right now, largely because of his ability to recruit. See, that's for this season, not for the entire roster. But, I think he's slowly building. He can have a healthy quarterback, which I don't think Maryland's had in, God, a decade. And who knows if they can win some of these bottom-tier games.
Yeah, I mean, Maryland's got to start somewhere. I feel like they kind of fall in that same they're almost wannabe Indiana, like where they just want to be in the friend zone. Like they're looking out in at the friend zone. But yeah, Mike Locksley, like you said, he's been recruiting well. It's just a matter of whether he can coach. I mean, if he can coach this team, you've seen it. Like they've beaten Texas the last 2 years. It's not like they can't beat talented teams. So I don't know. That's one that is like a couple of things. First of all, prove that you belong. Second of all, do not trust a single second of what you're seeing from them before, call it the fourth week in the season. Because it's been Texas the last handful of years, but like they only win early and like that's it. So that's a big time prove it one for me.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess I did misspeak it. They are the sixth most talented composite for their entire roster. You know, that's why they're able to hang with and beat the Texases. But then, you know, they seemingly it just becomes too much when you play, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, mm-hmm. Michigan State. Just when you lose games, it's like just so it's beyond defeating in that day. It can take a toll on the entire season and you kind of lose motivation. So, if they can jump out early and stick with it, I don't know. This is just a game I'm totally probably going to be the only person that I know that chooses to watch it. So, sorry.
Yeah, per usual.
For you guys.
Per usual, right?
Absolutely. But there is a Big Ten game of the week at the exact same time, Austin. Michigan travels to Minneapolis to take on the Gophers for the Little Brown Jug. That kicks on ABC, and that game went from opening as a Gopher 2.5-point favorite to a 2-point dog as of right now. kind of surprising to see that 4.5-point swing already. But people are buying the Michigan hype early and often, and I guess that's not new.
Yeah, I mean, some people just never learn their lesson, right? I mean, now I think Michigan probably deserves to be but you know what? No, I don't. Like, I really don't know how to feel about this one. Like, on one hand, I think Michigan's probably the more talented team. Like, just top to bottom, probably the more talented team. But they lost a ton on offense. They were placing, I think you said to me the other day, it was 4 of their offensive linemen and their quarterback, and Nico Collins isn't playing, and DPJ is gone. I mean, it is not an insignificant amount of talent that they're replacing there. Now, their defense, front seven specifically, should still be pretty good. Aiden Hutchinson, Quiddy Pay, Mike McGlone, Cameron McGrone. I don't know where that came from. They've got a pretty good front seven. So that shouldn't be the problem. Secondary is kind of up in the air. I think Ambry Thomas ended up opting out. He may have opted back in. I don't know. But defensively, they should be able to hold their own. And Minnesota did lose Tyler Johnson, who was a stud wide receiver. But they bring back their quarterback. They bring back some other exciting position players. PJ Flex clearly got a good thing going up there. They did lose Antoine Winfield Jr., their best player in the secondary. So I'm not sure. Listen, Michigan also has a horrible record in these games. They're like 1-19 against ranked opponents on the road or something, or where they're like a favorite or something like that. I saw some crazy stat where they basically the moral of the story is Michigan is exactly who you would expect them to be at this point.
Which is shocking to me, because
what? That they lose these games? I mean, that's all they've done under Harbaugh. They haven't won it. Like, that's the biggest indictment of him, is he hasn't won these kind of games.
No, I'll take it a step. Dig a step deeper. The reason it's shocking to me is not that. It's that you are in year 6 of your savior returning, and you have a toss-up game against Minnesota. Like, Minnesota. PJ Flex, third year. And it's not like it's Minnesota. I mean, they haven't had a Big Ten championship since, like, the 70s.
Like, I couldn't tell you.
So, for me, you can miss me with the Minnesota's good. Like, okay, you're in year 6. Like, you and they're Minnesota. So, like, I just kind of, I'm not, this shouldn't be a toss-up game, considering the
program. Yeah, I mean, this is where the prestige thing comes into play, where you want to consider yourself something, and, you know, you thought it was, but it's not that way type of thing. Because this is year 6. This is supposed to be a well-oiled machine in year 2. And now we're standing here. And again, you lost a lot of talent, but guess what? Ohio State loses a ton of talent every single year, and they're still putting up 11-win seasons. Like, this is, you don't get to play both sides. You're one thing or you're not. And I think, like, they're not. And that's fine. Like, not everybody is, but you just have to, like, it's that self-awareness that we talk about all the time, and I just don't think it really exists down there. But interesting first test for the new age Cam Newton. That'll be fun. Really huge first test for Joe Milton. If he's able to put a good game together, I mean, this team should be pretty confident, but we'll see. I just look at them, and I think it's like, you got to prove it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that goes for both teams. I think Minnesota's trying to, quote, prove that they belong. They're not a fluke, that they are here for the long haul. So this is a statement game for them as well. And I should correct myself. They haven't won a Big Ten championship since 1967. So that's where, they have a long way to prove that they belong, but wins like this would help do the trick. And one name we didn't, I don't know if you mentioned, if it weren't for Rondale Moore, this guy would be probably the flashiest or receiver in the Big Ten in Rashad Bateman. This guy is a playmaker in all sense of the words, and he opted out and then opted back in. This guy put up ridiculous numbers last year. So when Michigan's number one cornerback, Ambry Thomas, decided to opt out this year, that just makes that even more of an area to watch.
Yeah, that secondary for Michigan is going to be a big time trouble spot with Thomas leading. I mean, and that I think speaks to really the caliber of player that Amber Thomas is too. Like he is a very, very good player. To lose him is a big deal. I think one thing's interesting, and we'll talk more about this later on, you know, probably when we talk about Michigan next week, but which is insane to say, but their guys opted out and stayed out. I mean, they had two very good players in Nico Collins. You know, you and I were talking about it today in terms of a prospect. Nico Collins might be the best offensive prospect they've had since Braylon Edwards. I mean, like, he's that level of good. And you just lost him in a prime season with a new quarterback. I mean, that's a huge deal. And then Ambry Thomas, again, you know, he's your number one corner, probably the guy who would have worn their, you know, their number one and all those things that come along with that. So you might have lost, I mean, two of your top however many players and against a Minnesota team that's going to be feeling themselves, always going to be fired up for a game like this. I mean, it's a tough first game for Michigan.
Yeah, I will say about Nico Collins, I if I were a mock first-round wide receiver, I probably there's no point in playing if you can.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, and it's not to say that I don't agree with his decision. I totally agree with his decision. I find it interesting that they both opted out and stayed out, whereas a guy like Bateman, like you said, who is a star, you know, maybe not to the level of Collins, but a guy who, I mean, which maybe even says more about his decision because he's not at that level and needs that, you know, his decision to come back is a big one. It's calculated risk, but it'll be an interesting game.
The big question mark here is today, PJ Fleck noted that there were members of his team that did have positive tests for COVID-19, wouldn't reveal who and how many.
Right.
So we won't know until game time.
Yeah, and I can see PJ being the type of guy that just runs somebody out there and says, chin up, kid, you'll feel fine.
that would be
but we'll see.
Terrible.
yes.
So that wraps a quick season preview around the Big Ten. A lot of fun games this weekend. But the queen of them all, Rutgers versus Michigan State. Truly, Big Ten season is upon us.
Honest question. You're an unbiased observer. Where does this game fall on that list that you just – on this Saturday schedule? It can go Friday and Saturday schedule. Watchability for Big Ten. Is this probably the last one, right, that you'd watch as an average fan?
If I'm an average fan, I probably choose Michigan State Rutgers over Maryland Northwestern because Rutgers. You always tune in to see how bad it is, you know? Like if you see two bad programs. But you want to see
it's like gawking at a car. It's like gawking at a car crash. Like everybody slows down. Yeah. I'll buy that. That's solid logic. So can't wait to be in a part of a car crash on Saturday.
So before we get to the game preview, it's our favorite segment, Why This Program Stinks. A big thank you to everyone with the last minute effort here, getting us some great submissions. Austin, I'm actually going to let you go first with your thoughts because hilarious.
I mean, I don't really know that I have more than one thought, and just the thought is that it's Rutgers, dude. Like, I think they've reached this level of complete and total ineptitude where, like, it defines who you are. Like, if you meet somebody that went to Rutgers, you're like, wow, your school sucks at sports. Like, that's the first thing that I think of that and Tony Soprano. Like, those are the two things I think of, that they majored in waste management and that their sports teams are just awful. Like, I've told the Kansas football story before where, like, I was at a bar and people were actually tuning in for, like, an ESPN3 webcast of Kansas football. Like, Rutgers just falls in that same vein where I'm like, the level of self-hatred and dedication that it would take to be a fan of that school is something I want to say I can't fathom. But as a Detroit Lions fan, I can unfortunately like really kind of relate to in such a painful way. It's like, to do that for like willingly for more than one team, like, and to say, yes, this is my alma mater. This is part of like what I, like my personal history, like that just sucks so bad. And yeah, and it's like, I think when you get to the point where you're like, listen, this school, if they put together six wins, you should build a statue of someone. If you reach that point as a program and you're not speaking like semi tongue in cheek, which I'm not in this case, then you just need to assess the validity of your athletics department. That's where I think they're at. But it's fun. It's like, I will say the one thing about Rutgers is like, it's kind of fun bad still in a way. Like they're not, like Nebraska is horrible at both sports right now, and they're just annoying. Like at least Rutgers isn't annoying. Like I've never heard of an annoying Rutgers like fan, except for the one kid, the recruit who said we'll never lose to Michigan State, which was just hysterical.
That's a 180, considering as our the favorite stat of the pod is Michigan State has yet to lose to Rutgers in either men's college basketball or football since they joined the conference. Incredible.
Yeah, that's my favorite Rutgers stat.
It's shocking, really. So a lot on the line, a lot on the line Saturday for the Spartans to keep that streak going. I want to share a few statistics that I was able to find on Rutgers that I thought were worth sharing. Rutgers has made the NCAA tournament six times in their program history, Austin.
That's more than I would have thought.
They have seven NCAA tournament losses. The only team in the...
How?
Well, I'm glad you asked. The only team in the country to have more losses than tournaments played in is Rutgers. In 1976, I believe, they made it to the Final Four. And then you played third place games. And they lost that game as well. So they're the only program in the country that has lost more games than tournaments they've been in.
I really like that stat quite a bit. I kind of wish they still played that game.
Well, here's one that's worse. Since Rutgers' last NCAA tournament game, the last time they played in a game, which was 1991, Michigan State has played in 78 NCAA tournament games.
Wow.
That is privileged. Like, that is
spoiled. You know who this should really depress is Northwestern. Like, the fact that Rutgers has made it, has seven, Rutgers has six more losses in the tournament than you have appearances in the tournament. Like that should just really make you really just sad. Like there's not bad or anything. Just I'd be very sad if that was true about my school.
Really tough. I 78 NCAA. Think about this. If you're a listener, you've probably seen, I would like to think, you know, half of them, depending on how old you are. Some of you, all of them, you've had 78 magical experiences. Like watching an NCAA tournament game is, there's a special. It's awesome. It matters. Rutgers actually has guys on their coaching staff, Austin, their basketball coaching staff, that weren't alive the last time Rutgers played in the NCAA tournament. Okay?
Like, that's really great. Bad.
And I think the most damning thing is this past season they would have made it. But then we canceled.
Oh, my God. I know. I really – like, if you needed a sign, that's a sign. I was going to – you mentioned that, like, the fact that they have basketball coaches, which I think in and of itself is sort of a miracle, that people are like, yeah, hell yeah, Rutgers done, and actually sign the contract. But if you're, like, a Rutgers – someone in the athletics department, I think that's the first place you start looking for overhead. You're like, how many assistant coaches do we have? Do we really need them? Do we need them? Do we need any of them? Like, do we need them at all? I think it should be like a player coach team or just like one guy. Like, I think you just one guy and that's it. You'd be like, what? It's about, we'd be about the same with one coach.
I'm with you.
And so they need to shed some dead weight. That's where I'm looking first.
Well, I definitely feel that way about their football program, considering it's been 1,080 days since the last time they won a football game.
Oh my God. That is a startling number.
1,080 days. And, yeah. So, interesting. So many coaches, I don't know what they're doing, you know, but they're not good at it. Only UConn has a longer conference losing streak for football. So congrats to Rutgers for that. Apparently the Northeast is miserable at this sport.
Yeah. Football hotbed.
And then last year, they were outscored 365-51 in Big Ten games. That's not just against the top teams. That's everyone. 365-51.
So good.
That is an average Big Ten loss of 41-6. Like, you can, on average, expect to go out and lose by 35 if you are 2019 Rutgers.
Did you say 45-6?
41-6, you can expect to lose by 35 or more every time.
You're going to miss an average, like, you're on average going to miss an extra point a game. Like, yep. That's what that tells me. God, mm-hmm. That is awesome. Like, I guess this is where I hate the Lions even more. Cause like this is at least the level of spectacular bad where, like, I don't even think watching these games would be stressful. Like, no. I feel like you'd go out, and if you're within 14 at half, you're like, hell yeah, dude, this is great. Can you imagine if we won this game, you lose by 45? Like, but it just doesn't matter. Like, It with some other teams, they just like tease you, like Maryland or Northwestern, you kind of tease you into being like, oh, we're done, blah, blah, maybe. And then with Rutgers, they're just like, no, it's just a really, I bet their fans, all of them, all 15 of them, really probably appreciate that.
Well, in the past 5 years, they have 13 wins. And in the past 5 years, they have 4 conference wins. In the past 5 years, they have 3 road wins. Yeah. Well, all the 13 wins, I should note that 4 were against FCS teams. So what you will with that.
That is remarkable stuff. Should we start clowning this team?
Well, thank you to everyone. Should we start reading these? Some of our submissions? Okay.
Yes.
I'll start it off with our friend Jesse O'Brien, who says, nothing immediately comes to mind. I'm excited to hear what everyone else comes up with, which I really appreciate. Mitch Stewart tells us that Rutgers lives in America's garbage dump. At Pony Up Doc says, their logo is literally a big red Times New Roman R. Nice job, Rubraska.
Rubraska, like, that, I would take that so personally if I was a Nebraska fan and be like, you're just getting clowned for being like the West version of this horrible, horrible team.
I'll let you read a couple here, starting with from a friend of the pod, Zach Brooks.
Zach Brooks just says 3 words, 4th down spike. Yeah, it's going to be hard to ever get over that one. I'll be honest. That's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Davis Coughlin, 34, says they lost to the worst MSU team of all time, 49-0, which is accurate and remarkable.
That's like, that's tough, man. Like, that was the worst team.
No, it's like legitimately difficult. Like a legitimately difficult thing for someone to do.
Wow. The lone bright spot in the 2016 season.
It's a startling level of incompetence. Maddie Meh says, every Rutgers alumni I have met has quickly changed the subject. And they really had to try to hide the fact that they're in New Jersey. We got some other good ones here. Sparty Party 23 just says Butkers. ZTJ521 says Queens College, their first name, was a way to pander to the crown during colonial times. Hello. Mark Vanderhoff says their mascot answers the question, what would Sparty look like if he was the same except awful in every way? And my last favorite one is Peter Manette 3 says they have the audacity to flaunt the fact they're the, quote, birthplace of college football, an embarrassment to the sport. I love when they get like very pointed and personal.
Yes,
that's always one of my favorites.
The meaner the better, folks. A couple more. our friend Dougie D, I'm going to edit this one.
Yeah, this needs to be edited. I was going to leave it alone.
I think what's worth noting is the most famous player they've had in the last 20 years is Ray Rice. And so you can do what you will with that information and or search his name on Twitter and see what he has.
Or don't. Or don't, you know.
See what Dougie D had to say, because it's odd.
It's terrible.
It's odd.
It's objectively bad.
Zanjo, our friend, comes in hot with a lot of thoughts. They've made one postseason combined in football and men's basketball since they joined the conference. Wow. Their biggest rivalry, Penn State, doesn't even have its own Wikipedia page, which in these times, Austin, that's telling. Everything's got a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, that's very, very troubling.
Rutgers' savior is a guy who has one single double-digit win season. It was more recently seen having half of his team get a staph infection in Tampa Bay. I forgot about that.
It's the guy who got the Tennessee job, the Tennessee job, and then didn't get the Tennessee job. That's what we're working with here. A Tennessee reject.
Shiano's best conference record against the Big East is 5-2. Again, this is their savior. And finally, Rutgers' best decade was the 60s, the 1860s. It's pretty
cool. Boom roasted.
Oh, thank you to everybody who contributed. This was great, and appreciate the last minute submissions. If you want to get a head start, hopefully next week is even more nasty with Michigan on the docket. So get those submissions in before we even ask, because we'll probably forget again.
Yeah, that's really honestly the best advice you could give to someone, the most honest assessment of our ability here. Okay, last deal for today. A long pod. We're giving you guys a lot today. Let's talk Rutgers, John. Let's talk Rutgers actual football.
So we've talked a lot of trash. So, you know, we'll show you maybe why, because their roster leaves things inspiring. And frankly, Austin, I will say it. I've said it before. If Michigan State loses this game, I don't see a way MSU wins another game this season.
Yeah, that's an entirely fair take. Like, they can't. If you can't beat these guys, you just, I don't know. You have to question a lot of things. I agree.
So MSU opened as an 11.5-point favorite. It's moved to about 13. I don't know how to feel about that one. Computers say, on average, this is probably a 2 out of 3 chance that Michigan State wins. So not great. Not overwhelming odds, I would say. Austin, bring us to one of our favorite parts of the preview. Do you have any roster names for me?
I do have some roster names for you, John.
For our new listeners. We just read roster names. We're not going to give you any other context.
Yeah, we just read names off the rosters. There's no need to know more. Offensive tackle Raekwon O'Neal. Raekwon, like, Wu-Tang really has a tremendous level of influence, because Raekwon's popping up a lot recently.
It's true.
they also have a wide receiver named Aaron Cruikshank, a wide receiver named Shameen Jones, another big favorite of mine. Their backup kicker, their competing for a place kicker, is Guy Fava. Love that name. They have a linebacker, Olakunle Fatukasi.
Love it.
Yep. And then we also have, I would love to know where this name came from. Elorm Lumor. E-L-O-R-M. Elorm. And those are your names. It's not the most adventurous group of names. But two things that's worth pointing out now, and I think we should probably just keep an eye on this as the year goes on. Players that are the number zero. You may have noticed that zero is now an official number in NCAA football. Rutgers, in just the most fitting twist, has two of them.
Good one job, offense, guys.
One on defense. And both of them might be starters. The safety, Christian Azeem, is number zero. And then what I'm anticipating to be maybe the greatest visual in college football history is Noah Vedral, competing to be the starting quarterback, senior, is also number zero.
Yes.
Number zero for Rutgers playing quarterback is, to say that there's meme potential is probably underselling what could take place here on Saturday.
Oh, man. Someone should have advised that kid otherwise.
Yeah, like, Shiano should have been like, really? You? You sure? you know you're the quarterback, right? And you'd be like, oh, shit, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's just a hysterical, almost two on the nose, some are saying.
I would agree. Any on the depth chart that we should know?
So a couple names offensively that are interesting. Well, I'll just say in general, one thing I actually want to give Craig Shiano credit for is that he has pursued the transfer market hard. There are several transfers that are actually going to end up being immediately eligible for this team, all of whom are from like pretty big programs, to be honest. They have transfers from the following programs: Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio State, Boston College, Minnesota, Baylor, and then one from UCF by way of Ohio State. And several of those players are going to actually be eligible and play in this game. On offense, the biggest one to know is that Aaron Cruikshank. He's a Wisconsin transfer, small guy at only, I think, about 5'10", 150-something pounds. So a little dude, but a burner. I think the most notable contribution he had at Wisconsin was he actually had two kick return touchdowns in his time there. So definitely something that Michigan State's going to have to be on the lookout for. He does have some serious kick return ability. In terms of returning production, I believe he's their returning rusher, but Isaiah Pacheco is coming back and is going to be the starting running back. So that's something. And then they have what could be potentially a big mismatch. And I think it really boils down to whether they have the quarterbacks that can get them the ball. And I mean, there's no real reason to expect that they do. But they do have a tight end named Giovanni Haskins, who is 6'5", 240. And listen, we've seen tight ends with that type of size on lesser talented teams give Michigan State trouble in the past. The tight end from Western Michigan comes to mind from a few years ago. So it's very possible that that's a name you hear of. And Antoine Simmons is probably going to end up covering him because that's typically something that a star linebacker would end up doing, him in the safeties. So Xavier Henderson might get a little bit of time on him. So that'll be an interesting matchup because he provides something that they don't really have, and that's a standout physical trait in his size. So some things to know there. Defensively, when you look at the roster, on both lines, I think the biggest thing for this team is they just really, really lack size. I mean, when you look at the offensive and defensive lines, you have two total players, both lines combined, two players on the three or on the two deep that are over 300 pounds. That in the Big Ten is not going to get it done. I mean, if you need case in point or proof of that, just look at Michigan State's offensive line for the past handful of years. I mean, that's contained, and that's a group that has had a couple of guys that are over 300 pounds in it. This group has one starter in that their offensive line has one, I believe, just one starter that breaks that 300 pound threshold. So when you talk about, you know, what is the what do they need to do to stay in this game? What is Michigan State? You know, what are we looking at for storylines? I think who wins the line of scrimmage in this one will really tell the tale of the entire game. If kind of like you just said, John, if Michigan State can't win this game, they're not going to win a game this season. Like, this is just by far the easiest one they're going to get. If they can't win the line of scrimmage, even if they win the game, that is a extremely, extremely bad omen for the remainder of the year. MSU, again, not like they have a bunch of maulers up front, but they have actual Big Ten size. I mean, maybe not at every position, but Michigan State, for the most part, this roster is made up of Big Ten caliber athletes by and large. Rutgers is by and large the exact opposite. So, if you can't beat what essentially amounts to like a MAC type of football team profile with a quarterback that has never done anything impressive in Artur Sitkowski, you're in some trouble. So I would say in terms of themes to look for, you know, Michigan State wants to run the ball. If they can't do it in this game, it's going to be a long season. And I think if you're Rutgers, what you have to try and do is win games the way bad teams win games, which is they have to try to be able to run the ball. They have to limit turnovers, and they have to capitalize on mistakes from Michigan State. So, I mean, one thing MSU's done in the last handful of years is they've made stupid mistakes. They've gone 3-and-out a lot. They've lost the turnover and time of possession battle. The only way they can lose this game is if they do those things. If they win the time of possession and turnover battle, Michigan State's not going to lose this game. But if they don't, they can still win this game, but the odds become a lot more even a lot quicker. So that's kind of my take on this game in general. Any thoughts?
No, I'll add one more question for you on the spot. You know, knowing that Artur Sitkowski is probably going to get the start, but Noah Vedrill was named the Orr quarterback starter. He's a grad transfer from Nebraska by way of UCF and has a 2017 national championship ring, I might add. How many quarterbacks from both teams do you anticipate seeing action in this game?
I would say for Rutgers, it sounds like both these guys are going to play. I mean, they're listed as Orrs on the depth chart, so I would be surprised if we don't get both of them. I mean, especially being the first game of the year, these are typically the types of games when coaches, you know, typically they're non-conference games, but coaches like to give multiple quarterbacks some run. And obviously, you know, Shiano's not sold on one or the other. So I would anticipate both of them getting some chances. I don't know who starts or who finishes, but I would expect to see each of them for a couple drives. And then, I mean, for MSU, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, we're sitting here on Monday night of game week, and we don't know who the starter is. I think it's very safe to presume that it's Rocky Lombardi, but I would expect to see at least one of I would only expect to see one other guy play. I don't know who it's going to be. I think that's the fairest thing to say. At this point in time, you can say maybe it's Day, but maybe it's Peyton Thorne. I mean, you know, as always, shout out to Colton Pouncey, but he does such great work at The Athletic. He wrote a really interesting article on Peyton Thorne that, you know, he's getting some really positive reviews within that locker room and does a lot of the things that you – when you don't have a surefire stud quarterback, that you want a call it a game manager type of guy to be able to do. He's got a level of familiarity with Jaden Reed, obviously, from a few years back in high school. And, you know, there is the potential for him getting some burn. I will be personally very, very surprised if it's only one MSU quarterback playing. I'd expect a second. I don't know who it's going to be, but I do think, if it's not Theo Day, you might see a name get put into the transfer portal before too long.
Fair take. So that takes us to the football season predictions, Austin. You know, you mentioned, I think we both agree Rutgers is a must win, kind of goes without saying. And a good indicator of how the rest of the year could go, probably. You know, following the Rutgers games we mentioned is a game at Michigan, then at Iowa, Indiana, at Maryland, Northwestern, Ohio State, at Penn State, and then a crossover game. Let's just say the crossover game is a 50-50 shot. How many wins are you anticipating this year?
You know, it hard to say. I mean, I think personally that obviously we're going to know a lot more after this week. I think if Mel Tucker could put together a 4-win season this year, Michigan State fans should be incredibly, incredibly optimistic about the future. Not to say that they shouldn't if he comes up short of that. However, that's the number to me where I'm like, oh, wow, this is going to work. We should be very excited and extremely optimistic. And I think that's the number that gets recruits excited probably. I will say that, you know, maybe just as a pragmatist, I look at this schedule and I kind of batch games into three buckets. There's the definitely should wins, the 50-50s, and the pretty much surefire losses. I look at the surefire losses, Ohio State and Penn State. I doesn't matter at the end of the year, those teams are going to have a lot to play for. They're just better teams than Michigan State right now. End of story. I'm personally going to dump Michigan into that bucket, even though in all likelihood, it's probably going to be more of a 50-50 type of game. Just because of who it is and when it is in the season, they're a more talented team. That's just their program's way ahead of Michigan State's right now. So that's three that I'm kind of writing off. That leaves five that are at least a 50-50 shot. Rutgers at Iowa, Indiana at Maryland, Northwestern. I think Michigan State should get at a minimum three of those games. There's Big Ten talent on this team. There's really good coaching on this team. There's a level of familiarity that brand new coaches don't always have with their players on this team. Again, you're going to learn a lot this week against Rutgers. If Michigan State can run the ball, there's reason to think they could even steal a fourth one of those games. I think they're all winnable. I'm going to say between 3 and 4 right now, 3 and 4 wins. But that's just because we've seen literally nothing to date. But that is all going to require one of two things happening. I mean, it's going to require either a running game being really sound, or it's going to require a quarterback that can do more than just not screw up. It's going to require a quarterback that can make plays. And at this point, it's really hard to say if MSU's got that on the roster or not. So I'm going to say between 3 and 4 wins for the time being.
Yeah, I'm going to go firmly 3. And the reason, and if Mel is able to pull in a three, you know, pulls off a more than 3-win season, then as, I think you're right. You say, considering this roster, that is a really good sign that we made the right hire. If he has less than 3 wins, you know, inheriting a team that had back-to-back 7-win seasons, and before that, you know, a 10-win season, I don't care how many, attrition or folks left and what he's inherited on the roster. That would be a DEFCON 1 bad news sign because, as we mentioned, he does have the opportunity to play teams that Michigan State walks on the field and is more talented than, like Rutgers, mm-hmm. Northwestern. I think those are games where you walk on the field and are better. And then, as you mentioned, those 50-50 games of Maryland, Indiana, Iowa, you should feel pretty confident being able to hang with them with capable coaching staff. So, I'm in your boat that Ohio State and Penn State seem too far off, that the talent gap is too wide. We saw it last year. I have no reason to believe that gap has gotten any smaller since then. And then as for the Michigan game, I do feel like there is a bit more hope in that they are the least talented of the three right now. It is early in the season, and they do have their full attention on a very strong week one opponent. You would hope Michigan State has their eyes on the ball with Rutgers and not getting ahead of themselves, because we said, you lose that game, they probably don't win a game this year. So for me, I think, you know, we're on the same page as far as expectations. And then the crossover game, you know, we say it's 50-50, but, you know, as we mentioned, this is a team that lost to Illinois the last two times they played them.
Yeah.
You know, the Big Ten East is better than the Big Ten West, but where does Michigan State fit in that? You know, I'm not quite sure where they fit in the fold there. So I'm going to go with a 3-6 season. And as Austin, you keep reminding me, this is the season where you get to watch people grow up. And anything better than that, expectations that we've laid out is gravy, you know? So it's, I'm excited. Yeah. It's fun.
I'll officially go on the record and say 4. Maybe not all in the regular season, you know, potentially some of those are in that crossover game, but I'm gonna firmly say 4. I think Mel's got an upset up his sleeve, and I don't know. I'm doing this to myself. Like, yes, I'm fully aware of what I'm doing to myself, but I will agree with you. I think even if he only wins 3 games, like you said, you know, we kind of like compartmentalize, you know, what would be good, what would be bad. And it's so hard to know, like, just given everything that's going on this season. But I think anything less than 3 wins, to your point, would be a legitimate disappointment, because that means you lost to, I mean, that means you could have potentially only beaten Northwestern and Rutgers. It means you lost to Maryland. It means you lost every toss-up game. And that's not, simply not something Michigan State's really used to doing, even in your 7-win season. So, it's a 3-win season. I think everybody comes out, maybe not satisfied, but you're okay with it. 4 wins, I think, legitimate reason for, you know, feeling like, okay, that was pretty good. And then, anything above that, you know, that would be unbelievable. I almost don't want that to happen, because my expectations get a little too high.
Hey. We're not going to say no to wins, Austin. So
that's a fact.
I'm gonna leave the listeners with a positive note. I'm gonna give you a best case scenario for this season. MSU plays Rutgers, Michigan, and Iowa to start, and you go 2-1. So Mel steals one, okay? And he goes Indiana at Maryland, Northwestern, sweep them, get 3.
Ooh,
you're 5-1. You've won every toss up and you snuck one. Now you're going to go play Ohio State and Penn State. No matter how positive I feel, I don't feel good about those. You're 5-3. You're 5-3 headed into the crossover. Hey, do what you will with that, you know?
Yeah. And then you get the chance to go 6-3 and you got a bowl game. I mean, there could be something there. So I'm with you. I think it's an exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing the product on the field. I mean, there's so many unknowns, so many questions that I think we're just all ready to have a few answered and watch some MSU football. So
that's
pretty much all I got for you, John. That was a long episode. I'm proud of us.
Hey man,
some stamina.
We're ready to do this. We're season's upon us. We got to be in midseason form early. Looking forward to this Saturday, sharing some early morning beers with you guys on Twitter. Maybe the hard stuff if things don't go our way, or if things are going our way. Who knows?
Yeah, let's just plan on it.
All right. I'm good, Austin. Let's.
All right, guys. This has been a fun one. Thanks as always for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin. Go green. We'll catch you guys next week.
See ya.